The Kutzker Rebbe was once asked, the Rambam writes that every single midah that a person has can always be used for a good thing. If a person is generous, that could be used for tzedakah. If a person is a little selfish, that could be used to take care of his family, not to go to the extreme, and thus one is always supposed to achieve what is called the golden mean. So someone asked the Kutzker Rebbe, is there a place in the world for apikorsis? Heresy. Heresy l'char is never good. And the Kutzker Rebbe answered, although it's a bit of a humorous remark, that yes, there's a time to be an apikorsis too, and that is when a poor person comes to you and needs tzedakah, needs help, you don't tell him Hashem will take care of you. At that point, he says you have to be a shtickle apikoros, not really, but the sense that you have to take responsibility for a situation. You can't, as it were, abdicate achrayas by saying, oh, Hashem will take care of everything. That's the place of apikorsis. Of course, apikorsis is not a midah anyway, but we could ask a similar type of question. Galus, a punishment, richuk, distance from Hashem, Korban, is there anything good out of this? Is there any silver lining in the idea of galus? And in fact, there is. We have a saying in English, absence makes the heart grow fonder. That sometimes it is precisely when a person understands how far they are from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that there wells up within their personality such a yearning to be close, such a desire, such a cheshek, such a passion, that can be the foundation of a greater and deeper love than would have existed had there not been that richuk in the first place. People can get used to anything, even a Beis HaMikdash. I remember reading years ago, and again, this was a fictional historical novel, although written under from auspices, about Rabbi Akiva's great wife, Rachel. Feldheim published the novel years ago. And there was a line that stuck there in which some women were saying, why don't we go to the Beis HaMikdash today and see the Avodah? And one of the other women said, not Rachel, we can go tomorrow, let's go to the mall today. Could such a conversation have occurred? In some form, yes. And the gift of galus is to make us realize how far we are. And by knowing how far we are, we want to become close. We want our Father to come back to us. We want to come back. Hashiveinu Hashem Eilecha v'nashuva. Return, cause us to return to you, Hashem. And we will come. And that you can only have when there's distance. And thus Tisha B'Av, in the very depth of the grief of Tisha B'Av, is called a moed, a day of encounter, a day of yomtiv. We don't say tachanun on Tisha B'Av. It is said to be the day that Mashiach is born, not necessarily in terms of a birthday, but in terms of geula comes from a desire to be dovuk in Hashem. And it is the richuk of Tisha B'Av that creates that dveikus in Hashem. And thus, there's an old minhag I'm told in Yerushalayim that after Chatzais on Tisha B'Av, the women would go in the old yeshiv and sweep the porch, sweep in front of the door in honor of the coming of Mashiach, in the belief that yes, yes, the Geula is here. The Gemara says, someone asked Eliyahu HaNavi, Mei Masei Kasimar, when will Mashiach come? When will you, Eliyahu, come and announce Mashiach? And Eliyahu said, Hayayim, he'll come today. So the person asked, what do you mean, Hayayim? Yeah, well, you have to read the rest of the pasuk. Hayayim im b'kailai tishma'u. If you're ready and open, if we're ready and open to listen to the Eibishter, Mashiach will come today. He's ready when we are. Tisha B'Av can be that push that makes us ready to open our hearts for the Geula. We spoke extensively already, although many people weren't there, but I've been speaking here a number of times about the need of Sinas Chinam, to override Sinas Chinam, to be Mesakin Avas Yisrael, to build connections with Yidden, to judge people akaf schus, to understand that if we live in a world and we live in a country presently where there's so much misunderstanding of the values of Limud HaTorah, we have to understand that perhaps if we would show more love, more care, more concern for different types of Yidden, they would be open to the Torah as well. As the Pasuk says, Kamayim apanim elpanim kein leif adam liadam. As water reflects the face you show it, I smile at the water, I get a smiling face. I frown at the water, I get a frowning face, the Pasuk in Mishlei says. So too, the heart of one human being reflects back what it is shown. We show people kavod, derech eretz, respect, edelkeit. We make the name of Hashem misahev, beloved, which Rav Yashiv Zatzal has told us is the central avodah of our door. Then we can also expect that those who are chilonim, those who may not have such a connection with Torah right now, would come to respect B'nai Torah, respect Torah, turn to HaKadosh Baruch Hu in one way or the other. If the Yerushalmi says in every generation that we don't have a Beis HaMikdash, we are as guilty as the generation of the Churban, and if Chazal say the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed because of Sinas Chinam, then by definition, the Yerushalmi is telling us we still have the machla of Sinas Chinam. But the truth of the matter is, I don't think you have to bring a raya to it. It's something that's very, very obvious every single day. Sinas Chinam doesn't mean throwing rocks, and it doesn't mean insulting people. But it refers to coldness, distance, richuk, not caring, looking at people and saying they don't really matter. That's also a sinas chinam. The Netziv writes in the Hakdama to Sefer Bereishis, where he describes that Sefer Bereishis is called Sefer Hayashor, the book of the upright, the book of the Avais, Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. And the Netziv has an arichas, where the key of Yashrus is primarily Bein Adam L'Chaveiro. That's Yashrus. And he says that the Sinas Chinam of the Bayis Sheni, I'm just going to say the Netziv, I'm not going to even editorialize, was a Sinas Chinam that came out of a sense of L'Shem Shamayim, in which Yidden looked at other Yidden and labeled them as Apikorsim, Minim, and Kaifrim, in which, as the contemporary expression goes, anybody to the right of me is a fanatic, anybody to the left of me is an apikiris. It happens to be where I am, whoever the I is, that is correct. And the Netziv says that was the Sinas Chinam, that was Machriv the Bayis Sheni. And certainly on this day of Cheshbon HaNefesh, we all have to think about these words, how they apply to our matzav, how they apply to us as individuals, as communities, and what steps can we take in our own lives to try to be misaken this avla of sinas chinam. But that's not the main thing I wanted to share with you, although it's something that we have to think about not just on Tisha B'Av, Alibid the Emes, we have to think about it every single day. But I want to share with you the fact that just as Chazal say that HaKadosh Baruch Hu always gives us the refuah before the makkah, in many of the foreshadowings of Tisha B'Av, of Churban, HaKadosh Baruch Hu shows within that vision of Churban the eternal love that He has for Am Yisrael. When Yaakov Avinu, Chazal say, Maisa Ava Simen Labanim, right, what happens to our forefathers is a harbinger, is a prediction of what will happen to the future generations. When Yaakov Avinu runs away from Esav, and Yaakov is frightened, Yaakov is not sure if he will survive physically or spiritually as well. So the Pasuk says, Vayifka b'makayim v'yolen sham kiva ha-shemesh. He came to the certain place, actually Yerushalayim, and the sun set prematurely. And the Medrash says, the sun set earlier than usual. Shaka chama shalai b'yaynasa. And that is where Yaakov Avinu was mispalo. And the Svarim tell us that this itself is a remez for the Chorban Beis HaMikdash, because Chazal actually tell us that the pasuk we read in Kriyas HaTorah this morning, I'm allowed to talk about this on Tisha B'Av, Ki Seilid Banim Uvnei Banim V'nei Shantim Be'aretz, Moshe Rabbeinu tells us that when you dwell in the land and you're here for a long time, and then you will do Avodah Zarah, Hashem says, Avai Taivedin, you will be utterly destroyed. Rashi brings from Chazal that V'nei Shantim is Begamatria 852 years. And had the Yidden been in Eretz Yisrael 852 years, and had they sinned, there would have been total hashchasa. So hiktim HaKadosh Baruch Hu shtei shanim l'nei shantim. The Chorban Bayis Rishain was 850 years from the time they came to Eretz Yisrael, because it was 440 till they built the Bayis Rishon, and the Bayis Rishon was 410. And it was the hikdim of the Piranius two extra years earlier that enabled the Jewish people to be saved. And the Mefarshim say that is the remez in Yaakov Avinu, that the sun set earlier than usual. On one hand, it's a remez of Chorban. On the other hand, it's the Eibishter's Nechama, that precisely because of the Yisurin that are coming earlier, Bnei Yisrael are going to be nitzal. Bnei Yisrael are going to be rescued. Chazal also teach us that on that particular occasion, Yaakov Avinu enacted the practice of davening Ma'ariv. The sun sets all of a sudden. Now Yaakov doesn't have any vision of the angels yet. That comes after his tefillah. It's totally dark. And we know Avram enacted Shachris, and Yitzchak enacted Mincha, and Yaakov enacted Ma'ariv, and this is the basis of Ma'ariv, not Kriyas Shema, that's the Oraisa, but Ma'ariv, the Tefillah, some type of Tefillah. It's Vayifka B'makim V'yalan Sham. And Rav Tzadok says very beautifully that the three Tefillahs of Shachris, Mincha, and Ma'ariv represent three different ways that we relate to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And it is Yaakov's way that is ultimately the deepest, the most difficult, the most subtle. Shachris, which is the morning, represents a time of gratitude. It's a new day. One sees new opportunities, new potentials. The dominant mood of Shachris, Rav Tzadok says, is Hakaras HaTov, gratitude for the Chastei Hashem. And this was Sugapas to Avram Avinu, who saw in his lifetime all of the brachos of HaKadosh Baruch Hu Mekuyim, that he had a son Yitzchak, and even Yishmael did tshuva. And Avram was respected as Nasi Elokim. He was wealthy, he was influential, he was matzliach in Kirav Rechaikim, as Hanefesh, Asherasu Bacharan. And the numbers the Medrash implies are tens of thousands of people. Right? Before there was an Or Sameach, Avram did it alone, Avram and Sarah. Avram with the men, Sarah with the women. So the prayer of Shachris is gratitude for what Hashem gives me. That's the aside of the morning prayer. Mincha, you pray as the shadows of the night are coming, at least if you do Mincha Ketana. That represents the prayer of the person who is fearful that Hashem is taking things away and they're slipping away. And he turns to Hashem and he says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, let me hold on to your brachos a little bit more. And Rav Tzadok says, this was Sukkapas to Yitzchak Avinu. Because Yitzchak Avinu, on one hand, was still in Eretz Yisrael. But the 400 years of Golos began with Yitzchak. Yitzchak was made to feel a stranger in Eretz Yisrael. The Plishtim filled up his wells, harassments. So if Avram's prayer is the prayer of gratitude, Yitzchak is the prayer of panic, The person who still has the Birchas Hashem, but it's slipping away, and he turns to Hashem and says, let me hold on to it a little bit more. What is Yaakov's prayer? Yaakov, Rav Tzadok says, is the prayer of Emunah. Yaakov has nothing. Yaakov is 63 years old. He's not a young man. He has no wife at this point. He has no money. Eliphaz, the son of Esav, took everything away. He's running away from a threat to his life, from Esav. He's running to the house of Lavan, where in Ruchnius the Sakana might even be greater. He's leaving the Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael. He is leaving the house of Yitzchak and Rivka, never to see Rivka again, and as far as he thinks at least, he will never see Yitzchak again. He has nothing. B'derech HaTeva. There's no way out here. And Rav Tzadok says, the Yesod of Tfilas Ma'ariv is even that in the darkest moments of life, when there is no hope at all, you have emuna that HaKadosh Baruch Hu will take care of you. And that's a very, very high level. To be grateful for what Hashem gives you. The Navi Yeshayo said, we read it yesterday in Shabbos, Yad Ashor Kaineyu. Even the ox knows the person who feeds it. To be grateful? Granted, we're talking not so grateful for many brachas the way it is, but l'chayra, that's the most basic, obvious mida. When things are slipping away, to ask God to help you, everyone knows the old saying, there's no atheists in foxholes. Even the atheist will say Shema Yisrael when the bombs are bombing around him, just in case. But to see and to feel the presence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, when you've hit rock bottom, in darkness, when there's no hope, there's nothing left, there's no future that appears in front of you, to see God and feel God in Auschwitz, to feel the presence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, even within the Churban of Tisha B'Av, that's the Madrega of Yaakov Avinu. That's the Yesod of Tfilas Arvis. That's why the Pasuk says, that's why in the morning, Emes V'yatziv, God's truth is firm and established, it's obvious, it's clear. In the morning of life, we see the goodness of Hashem. In Ma'ariv, Emes V'yemuna, I have faith in Hashem's goodness, although I don't always see it. And in many Hasidic Shesvarim, the thought is expressed, Lahagid Babaiker Chastecha, David HaMelech says, I declare your loving kindness in the daytime, v'emunascha b'leilais, and your faith in the night, that day and night are remazim to the different stages of human existence. The mornings of life are times of joy and brightness and chesed. I declare the chastei Hashem. But what about times of richuk, times of distance, times of golos, times of chorban, times of yisurin, whether collectively or individually? David HaMelech says, I have emuna even then. So Tisha B'Av, as we relive and we experience chorban, can give us a gift of emuna that is a madrega that is even deeper than when the chastei Hashem are obvious. Precisely when there's hester panim, Hashem is giving us the opportunity to grow in our emunah, to grow in our yearning, grow in our passion, and grow in our emunah that everything is totally on HaKadosh Baruch Hu, because there's nothing that we can take for granted. And therefore, within the very nevuah of Shaka Chama Shaloi B'Yainasa, where the sun sets, 2 years, two earlier, which is a remnant to the Churban, 2 years earlier, number one, we see that even in the Yisurin, there are gifts that we don't perceive. Because had the Churban waited another 2 years, that would have been a destruction of Am Yisrael. And number two, we see the Madrega of Emuna that the Tzaddik gets, Bidafka, from Hester Panim, from concealments, from the absence of an open relationship with Hashem. gave Yaakov the greatest of all matanos, the gift of emuna that otherwise would not exist. But let me go further. According to the Zayar, there is yet another incident in Yaakov Avinu's life, which is a remez to the Churban Beis HaMikdash. And this is also an encounter in darkness. But this is not the encounter in darkness on his way to Lavan's house, but on the way back many years later, decades later. The night before he is going to meet Esav, his brother, who wants to kill him. The night before that crucial encounter, he wrestles with a mysterious figure for the entire night. And Chazal tell us, the Chumash is not explicit who this mysterious person is, but Chazal say it is Sarai Shel Esav. It is the angel, the guardian angel of Esav, the spiritual force of Esav, that somehow before Yaakov encounters Esav in Gashmias, he must somehow struggle with this spiritual power of Esav that exists in the world. The Zayar HaKadosh says that the long night of Yaakov wrestling with Esav occurred on the night of Tisha B'Av. It was Tisha B'Av. And the remez of the Malach making him limp is a remez that indeed there'll be Golus. Indeed there'll be Churban. But as the Sefer HaChinuch says, implicit in the Malach hurting Yaakov is the even more important message that the Malach was not able to destroy Yaakov. And that at the end of that very long night, which is a remez to the Golos of Tisha B'Av, there is an Amud HaShachar, there is a dawn, and in that dawn, the very enemy that tried to destroy you will give you a bracha. It's an amazing thing that if the Zohar is setting up the whole struggle of Yaakov and the Malach on Tisha B'Av, look how much nechama is built in to that very vision. Yes, the Yidden are limping. When this galus ends, we're not going to come out, you know, in fantastic shape. We've limped. We've lost so many Jews to assimilation, to intermarriage, to physical destruction. But the Torah is promising us there'll be an Am Yisrael. The Torah is promising us there'll be a dawn. The Torah is promising us there will be a bracha, even from the enemies that try to destroy us, that they too will be makir Am Yisrael, there will be makir HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And as the Navi says, ki beisi beis tefila yikare l'chol ha'amim, that the makam ha-mikdash will be a beis tefila for the entire world. And we say this in Aleinu three times a day, Yakiru v'yedu kol yashvei sevel. And this vision will be realized. And on the very day of Tisha B'Av, HaKadosh Baruch Hu built that nechama into the Mara of Tisha B'Av. So we should know as we sit in Churban not to be despondent, not to give up hope, not to think it's hopeless and it's endless, but to understand that this is a process that we go through, a process of emunah, a process of cheshbon hanefesh, a process of understanding that there's so much we don't understand. But to know that after the darkest night, there's going to be a day. Let me share with you within this nevuah, or within this incident, one further Musr that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is giving us, in which, in telling us about the Makkah, he also gives us the Refuah. Yaakov asks the angel, tell me your name. And the angel says, Lama Zeh Tishal Lishmi. Why are you asking me my name? So Rashi says, I have different names depending on my mission. I don't have a set name. Rav Shodron Zatzal, the great Maggid of Yerushalayim, brings from his Rebbe, Rav Leib Chassman, that the Malach is actually answering the question. My name is, don't ask my name. That's my name. My name is, why do you ask my name? What type of name is it? Why do you ask my name? So he gives a mashal about a farmer, a Polish peasant, who was going to the big city for the first time. And he was told, he had never seen a movie before, he was told if he goes into this theater, buys a ticket, he will see from the walls, without explaining how this works, he will see people and animals coming out of the wall. Magic. Well, he was very curious about this. He bought the tickets. He sits in the dark office. All the lights go out. And all of a sudden, what had been a blank wall, people and animals and cowboys and Indians, whatever was popular in Poland when this story took place, all of this is coming out. And he couldn't understand it. A minute ago, it was a solid wall. Was there a hidden door? So he took his big flashlight and he shone it on the wall to try to get a better view of what was going on. But of course, if you shine a bright light on a motion picture screen, you don't see the movie at all. So everybody was yelling at him and they said, shut off your light. We can only see the picture when it's dark. Rav Shadron said, and again in the name of Leib Chasman, that this is a mashal for Olam Hazeh generally. When the lights are dark, meaning when we don't think about life, when we don't think about what's important, all sorts of things that are really imaginary seem to be real, whether it's the money that you make, the power that you have, the control you have over people, the status in society. It's like a movie. When the lights are off, it looks real. But that also means, when the lights are off, a lot of real stuff you just don't notice. So there might be a diamond ring next to you, you're not going to see it. When lights are off, you see all sorts of things as real and significant, which don't really exist. And things that are real aren't even observed. When you turn on the lights, that which is fake vanishes, and that which is real can be seen. So Rabbi Leib Chasman says the following. When Yaakov asks the angel, what is your name? He's asking a very deep question. He knows the angel is the power of Esav, and the power of Esav symbolically and mystically represents the power of evil in the world, the power that leads people astray, the power that is Goreim Chet. And the name is the source of that power. What is your name is, what is the source of your power? How do you trick people? It makes no sense to do Averus. Whatever Tayelus, whatever momentary pleasure we get from not serving Hashem is going to be bottled in billions and billions in the other direction. So Yaakov is mispale. How do you entice people? What is your trick? And his answer is, my trick, my name is, nobody bothers to think about what I represent. Nobody asks my name. They don't turn on the lights. When the lights are not turned on, the fake looks real, and the real is not even noticed. So it turns out, according to Rav Leib Chasman, great Mashgiach of Chevron, the darkness has a double meaning. It is the darkness of Chorban and Golos, which the Zohar says took place on Tisha B'Av. But it's also the darkness within us of not thinking about what life is about, not perceiving true reality, focusing on the ephemeral and the transient and the trivial. So it's an amazing thing. It's as if we're put into a dark room in which we totally can't see, but it's within our power to turn on the light switch. And then we're not in the dark anymore. So the gullus of darkness is connected to the darkness within us of not focusing on reality. So built into the nevuah of gullus is the idea that by changing our own perceptions and by turning on the internal light, we are also misalek. the golos light as well. Right? The choshech is the choshech mibachutz, the choshech mibifnim. Again, what we see from all of this is that within all of the foreshadowings of the Churban of Tisha B'Av, Hashem is giving us the key to get out of it as well. Let me share one final example of this. And this is the Medrash Eicha. We know Tisha B'Av, saddest day of the year. In fact, people want to say, well, maybe this year it's not so sad because this is the 10th of Av already. But the emes is, many poskim even say that since most of the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed on the 10th of Av, so the leniencies you might have when you push off a fast might not apply to Tisha B'Av. In fact, Rav Yochanan said in the Gemara that if he would have been around in the generation of the Churban, we don't paskin that way, but he says he would have been misakin it on the 10th of Av. But then we know, in 1 week, few days, we have the 15th of Av. And the 15th of Av, the Mishnah says in Maseches Tainis, together with Yom Kippur, these were the two happiest days in Klal Yisrael. Yom Kippur, 15th of Av. They had marriages then, that was days of Shiduchim, right? It was like people would choose their Basherets, etc. But the Gemara asks, we understand why Yom Kippur is such a happy day, a day of forgiveness, day of Kapara, day of Slicha. Wonderful. What could be greater? But what's so great about the 15th of Av? Like what happened on the 15th of Av? And the Gemara gives no fewer than six reasons why the 15th of Av was a day of Simcha. The first reason it gives was in the 40th year of the desert, this is when the Jewish people knew that the Gezerah of the Meraglim was over. Hashem had decreed that the whole generation would die out over 40 years. Only the new ones, or the ones below 20, would survive. And according to the Yushalmi is Masbir, a little bit that the Bavli doesn't tell you, every Leil Tisha B'Av, the entire generation would dig a grave, and they would sleep in the graves. And those who reached 60 the preceding year would not get up. Other people got up, and they would keep on doing this every single year, progressively. The number is getting smaller. The very last year, nobody died. The Rishonim discussed, it's very problematical. Does that mean people should have died? Because if everybody was already dead, there'd be no Kiddush. Rabbeinu Tam actually learns that people who should have died didn't die. And they were amazed. So they figured maybe we have the wrong date. Maybe it's not the 9th, so that maybe it's early. So they did it the next day, the 10th, the 11th, the 12th, the 13th, the 14th. But the 15th, they saw a full moon. When they saw a full moon, they knew the 9th of Av was passed. The Gezerah was batal. HaKadosh Baruch Hu allowed approximately 15,000 people to enter Eretz Yisrael. They should have died. Again, we don't have time to go into the... this is a very Shver Gemara, actually, because the Pasuk says Beferish, it was only Yoshua and Kalev were the only men of that generation. According to this, there were 15,000 other people. But it says the great Simcha was that the last Gezerah was Batel. That's reason number one. Reason number two, the daughters of Slavchad, when they inherited property, were told that they were not allowed to marry somebody from another tribe, because they would then be transferring property to their husbands or their children, and they'd be removing property from the Shevet. They were only allowed to marry people of their Shevet. This halacha applied to the first generation that came to Eretz Yisrael, but eventually, after the Eretz Yisrael was divided, this was annulled, and that was a great simcha, because every Yid could marry every other Yid. That's why it's connected to marriage. And Mimela, Chazal had a Mesaira, that occurred in some unknown year after Yoshua's time, on the 15th of Av. Hutru Shvatim Lavai Zebaza. That's the second reason. The third reason, those hundreds of years later, in the time of the last of the kings of the 10 tribes, this is before the Churban Beis HaMikdash, where ever since Yeravam ben Nevat, he had put guards who would not allow Jews to go from the northern kingdom to the Beis HaMikdash. Hoshea ben Ela was mevatel the guards and he gave people freedom to go to the Mikdash. And that was on the 15th of Av, a great simcha, avodas Hashem, people can serve Hashem properly. Wonderful simcha. The Gemara in Tainus asks the obvious kasha, he did such a great thing, so why was his kingdom destroyed? The Gemara says, there's a shtickle musr here. He removed the guards and said, whoever wants to go can go, but nobody went. All the years there were guards, they have an excuse, we can't go. People say now in the Welt, you know, for many, many years, doesn't apply to Bnei Yeshiva here, people had excuses not to learn Torah. You know, there weren't translations, there weren't audio shiurim. So people had excuses. Baruch Hashem, we have very fewer excuses today because there are so many opportunities. And we see from the Gemara, when opportunities exist and we don't take advantage of them, that's worse than the person who claimed he didn't have the opportunity. But be it as it may, giving the opportunity was a simcha. Okay? Then, we have an earlier issue. I left out something, that there had been a war during the period of the Shoftim with Shevet Binyamin, Pilegesh Begiva. Shevet Binyamin was almost totally decimated. But at the end, Shevet Binyamin was allowed to intermarry with the rest of the Jewish people. That's a simcha. So I've mentioned four. I'll just mention two others very, very quickly. Beitar, the Churban of Beitar happened on Tisha B'Av as well, around 52 years after the Churban Beis HaMikdash. This was the last revolt of Bar Kokhba to throw off the Romans. And the massacre of Beitar was an awesome massacre. The numbers of Jews that were murdered in Beitar were much greater than even the Churban Beis HaMikdash. And Hadrian, did not allow the bodies to be buried for over 3 years. He wanted them to decompose. He wanted them to be used for fertilizer. He wanted the Jews to understand the consequences of revolt. And he did not allow those hundreds of thousands of bodies to be buried. But there was a great miracle that over 3 years they did not decompose. And on the 15th of Av, in other words, 3 years and 1 week after the massacre, Haruge Beitar were nitnu lekvura, and Chazal added a fourth bracha in Birchas Hamazon. Hatayva hametiv, God does good and is good for these two ideas, that we were given the sechus of burying the mesim, and the mesim were lo hisrichu, they didn't spoil, they didn't decompose. That was the fifth simcha of the 15th of Av. How Chazal see, even in a tragedy, they see the Hashkacha of Hashem. And the final point the Gemara in Tainus makes is that every year they had to cut wood for the coming year in the Beis HaMikdash. And the 15th of Av was the last day in the season that they cut the wood, because afterwards the summer is not as hot anymore, and the wood might be moist and be moldy and have worms or warping or whatever. So it was a simcha that Baruch Hashem, we can break the axe, so to speak. We don't have to cut trees. We have six simchas on the 15th of Av. Meisei Midbar didn't die. Women of one tribe can marry another tribe. Shevet Binyamin was allowed to enter Am Yisrael. The guards who prevented access to the Mikdash were Nisbatel. Then we have Haruge Beitar were buried, and the woods cutting was completed for the year. Six different simchas. Now here's what I want to share with you. Chazal tell us there were five tragedies. In later history there were other tragedies as well. But Chazal tell us there were five tragedies that occurred on the 9th of Av. The thought that I want you to think about, although it's a five and a six, so it's not a totally symmetrical list, you will see that each tragedy of Tisha B'Av carried with it a refuah, a yeshua, a nechama that Hashem gives you 1 week later. that the simchas of Chamisha Asar Biav exactly correlate to the tzaras of Tisha B'Av. So within the tzara, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives you a nechama. So let's look at it. The first tragedy of Tisha B'Av is it was nigzer that our forefathers would die over the course of 40 years. Right? That's when the Meraglim came back. The first simcha of Chamisha Asar B'Av was the annulment of that gezerah in the last year. The second tzara is the Chorban Bayis Rishain. Chazal tell us the Chorban Bayis Rishain was for three Chomer Averis, Avodah Zarah, Gili Arayah, Shvichas Damim. But if you look in the words of the Nevi'im, it seems that Avodah Zarah was the most powerful of the Yetzer Hara. And Avodah Zarah was the Shirish of everything else. So if Tisha B'Av represents, as it were, the negative, destructive triumph of Avodah Zarah, on Chamisha Asar B'Av, albeit this was before the Chorban, you see that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us the ability to be liberated from the Kayach of Avodah Zarah. And that was the annulment of Hoshea ben Ela's guards that allowed people to go to the Mikdash instead of worshipping the Egel. Now good, there are different times, of course. This is before there was a Chorban. But the point is, the Chorban Bayis Rishon comes because of the Hisgabrus of Avodah Zarah. And HaChamisha Asar B'Av, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us a kayach to be liberated from Avodah Zarah. The second Beis HaMikdash, we know, was Necharav because of Sinas Chinam. Sinas Chinam is the breakdown of Bein Adam L'Chaveray. HaChamisha Asar B'Av, this is where two things come in. Two of the simchas are connected to his chabras, to unity in Klal Yisrael. One is women from one tribe can marry people from another tribe. And the other one is Shevet Binyamin is allowed to enter Klal. So that's where you get two. Because unity means all Yidden are one. We can marry each other. We connect to each other. Why should there be Sinas Chinam? Kulanu b'nei ish echad nachnu. Then, the fourth tragedy of Tisha B'Av, the destruction of Beitar, 15th of Av, Haruge Beitar, Nitnu Likvura, they were buried. The fifth tragedy of Av, of Tisha B'Av, Nechrisha Ho'ir, that when the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, it's actually not clear if this was after the Chorban or after Beitar, but at some point, the Romans plowed over Yerushalayim and much of Eretz Yisrael with sulfur and salt to destroy the fertility of the land. The effects of this, amazingly enough, still exist even today, although, Baruch Hashem, we have remarkably, with the Kadosh Baruch Hu's help, we have remarkably compensated, but there is still an effect. These are things that last for thousands of years. And yet, on Chamisha Asar B'Av, we were able, as it were, to get enough wood every single year for the Beis HaMikdash. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us back the fertility of Eretz Yisrael. So although it's a five versus a six, but the concept is, it's built into our calendar that for each tzara of Tisha B'Av, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives you a nechama, and it's no accident that the 15th of Av is the seventh day. It's getting up from Shiva. It's the seventh day from Tisha B'Av. As if to say, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, we mourn and we're misabel. But we also have to get up from Shiva and understand that HaKadosh Baruch Hu's chesed is merubah. Erech apayim malei rachamim. The Eibishter wants to give us Yeshua. We just have to be ready and able to receive it. This is why the last, and maybe the most moving of the kinos, actually it's next to the last, is, you know, all the kinos we normally recite, if we're able to, sitting down on a low bench or on the floor. But then we have Eli Tziyain V'Yareha. By the way, just for an audience like this, there's no need to say it, but I'll mention it anyway. The word Eli means to lament. It is not Hashem's name. Some people say Keli Tzion. It's Eli is a verb meaning to lament. Let us lament for Tzion and her cities. Like a woman who's suffering labor pains, which is a remarkable metaphor, that from these pains come birth. But we also mention the other way, like an almana who has lost her husband, because we experience both. On one hand, we're like an almana and we think there's no hope. But in reality, the pains are the pains of birth. There is the perception of besulach agurasak, and then there's the reality. But you'll notice that that is the one kina, the only kina that we say when we stand up. Why do we stand up at that point? Because there's a remez here that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was saying. Your goal in life is not to be immobilized in grief. You have to get up. You have to get up and do in the world, to do mitzvahs, to do Torah, to be chesed, to be Isaac in Yeshuva Shalom. You're getting up from Shiva, even though it's before Shiva, but there's a remez even on Tisha B'Av, to get up. But when you get up, you don't forget the Beis HaMikdash. You don't say, I finished my kinos sitting, and then I get up. No. When I get up, I take the kino with me. When I get up, I still remember. I have to think about the Mikdash all the time. I have to think about what we're missing all the time. But I don't use it to immobilize me and to paralyze me. But I use it as the she'ifa, as the push, as the incentive for me to grow in my avodas Hashem and to understand that for every onesh HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives us, that the shaka chama, the sun setting 2 years early, was in fact what ensured the kiyum of Klal Yisrael. The sun setting early is what gave Yaakov Avinu the gift of emunah, which enabled them to do ma'arif. The fight of Yaakov and the angel gave Yaakov the insight from the angel himself that if we understand reality and turn on the lights, we can end that galus. And even the Churban of Tisha B'Av finds its corrective in the six things that happened on the 15th of Av. So B'ezras Hashem, you know, they say a certain Hasidic Rebbe every year would buy a new kinais Erev Tisha B'Av. And the Meicher Sfarim would ask him, you know, why are you buying it? I mean, I sold it to you last year. And he said, last year's kinos, I put in Seamus, right after Tisha B'Av. I put in Seamus. I am 100% sure I'm not going to need it again. Nebuch, if it's Erev Tisha B'Av, you know, I'm assuming I'll need it this year, I buy it new. I don't know if most of us have that level of emunah. But certainly, we could be mispalel, or at least wish that we could feel that this will be the last Tisha B'Av of Avelus, the last Churban, and that as the Navi tells us, this day should be the day Mashiach is born, and this should be the day of Sasin V'Simcha, Gula Shlema, B'Mehirav Yameinu.